you imagine, especially when confronted with my clear consideration with you, that all you have to do is listen to me speak, or go and have some conversation with one another, or observe yourself some during the day, and that this fundamental self-understanding is going to happen as if by magic or by routine. It is no ordinary matter to get at the root contraction that is egoity itself. There's nothing automatic about it. You must equip yourself for it. The qualifications for doing so are that you become a yogi, a true devotee. You take on the practice I've given to you, adapting to the fundamental practices, various observations are made. For every observation made, new yamas and niyamas should be established, for which you're held accountable by the culture. By this constant process, observing, taking on new disciplines, you become more and more disciplined in your own case. Unique disciplines are established in your own case that account for what you've observed. In this process, you become clearer, stronger. The discipline itself is what enables you to observe yourself more profoundly, more in the direction of the core. So you can't simply, by listening to my summary address about the nature of bondage, the nature of egoity, expect to carry on in some frivolous fashion and get to the root of it and understand yourself most fundamentally. You must do the sadhana. And sadhana takes some amount of time. You can build time into it that's unnecessary, but it inevitably and necessarily takes some time, because you must go through the process of becoming a yogi. You must go through the process of developing personal discipline based on your observations. You must develop this clarity that will enable you to grasp the core of your own bound life. So it's not a talking school matter, it is a practicing school matter. You all seem to be having difficulty grasping this point, or not really wanting to have anything to do with it, perhaps. Sadhana requires the ordeal of discipline. Self-observation does not occur without it. You can make general observations about yourself in a peripheral fashion, rather superficially, without disciplining yourself much more. But you can't get closer to the core without disciplining yourself much, much more. You cannot observe any more than your discipline allows. And your discipline must not only include the general practices I've given to all devotees, it must include all the yamas and niyamas, all the disciplines that are necessary in particular to you, based on the patterns you observe in your own case. So in every case, then, there must be special disciplines, unique disciplines, that are based on your own observation, confessed within the culture. Yamas and niyamas are established by agreement, and then you're held accountable for them. These yamas and niyamas, or disciplines, are what enable you to observe one step closer to the core of your own traumatization. Without it, you can't get even one step closer. This being the case, and it is wholly true, it is remarkable then, after so many years, now 21 years, you are still all resisting the matter of discipline. I think you can just be some bright-eyed conventional religionist and enjoy great realization. Or that you can just practice mere observances and actually progress in this way. You must be very serious about this matter of discipline. And not only the general disciplines, but those disciplines that must apply to you personally in a very specific and unique fashion. So it is a progressive process, a progressive ordeal, a progressive process of self-observation that progresses by the institution of progressive discipline. You may imagine that you can come and sit with me here and we consider this matter of the fundamental contraction. How this is what you must understand. You may imagine that all you have to do is think about that a little bit and have a conversation the next day, and true hearing is the case for you, you see? You cannot observe and be responsible for the fundamental contraction without this real process of involving self-discipline and all the aspects of practice I've given you. If greater discipline hasn't been introduced, then there is no greater progress to report. And even if disciplines are introduced, it takes some time for further observation to take place, for greater clarity, to bring about change, even utter clarification. You can't be a casual life fool and truly progress in self-understanding. You can't casually indulge in your patterns, your superficiality, your ordinariness, your tendencies, your seeking, your reactivity, your casual desiring, and so forth, and progress in self-understanding. But that's precisely what you are attempting to do, you see? You are attempting to do all those things, indulge in all those things. And yet you still expect great clarity, great understanding, great realization, great progress in this practice. It's nonsense, you see? It's the self-guruing of the ego that suggests that that's possible. Narcissus guruled himself into the wilderness, you see, and indulged in an utterly fruitless effort counter to self-understanding, counter to the realization of truth. That's what the self-guruing of the ego produces: absurdities, dead ends, mere karmic destiny. I expect greater clarity from you every day. I expect you to be really present in the consideration of this way of life. That means you must maintain your discipline, you must be consistent in your focus in what this way is truly all about. And with every observation, new yamas and niyamas should be introduced. When I say that to you, I'm not exaggerating. I mean with every observation. Whatever discipline you have in your life has allowed you that observation. No greater observation closer to the core will become possible for you unless you discipline yourself further. So you must discipline yourself relative to the very observation you've made. I'm blah blah, I do blah blah. That suggests what discipline must you introduce then? It will put you up against that tendency starting from that moment. You see. It's only by being put up against tendencies you've already observed that you'll observe others less peripheral, more toward the center, you see? Because you lack fundamental discipline, detailed discipline, you're always wandering in your petty life problems, reacting, desiring, and seeking. And you want to talk about that forever, and you think talking about that, bothering one another with that, is reality consideration. What's the next thing to be observed? Well, there will be no next thing observed without greater discipline, more yamas and niyamas. Without more yamas and niyamas, you may observe something, but it'll be in the same sphere of your previous observations, the same level of the mess, the same peripheral putting of ordinary life occupation or preoccupation. So what we should have been discussing was, based on the discipline you've established, you see, greater observations, and then, well, what discipline should you be applying now? That's the business of your culture with one another. That's what your meetings with one another are supposed to be about. You should have them as frequently as you can manage it, and every time, more disciplines should be established for as many as who can be communicative in that group occasion. Hopefully all, optimally all. That's why you have to make real time for such considerations. Not just fit in 45 minutes here and there, you see. You must do it consistently, as frequently as possible. Do it seriously, put aside real time for it, and really get down to business in it. Just as you tend to waste a lot of time in my company, discoursing forever in your affirmations and generalizations, you see. You can do the same other and just waste those opportunities of gathering together or reality consideration together. Especially if you don't apply new disciplines to each one who makes an observation or about whom something is observed on such occasions. And you don't have to wait for the next group meeting to establish new disciplines in your own case. You make your own noticing of yourself hour by hour, day by day. Introduce those disciplines yourself and then bring them up in the group and be held accountable by them. It's a constant work, you see. If you're not working at it, it's boring. You're just falling back into the soup again, getting dull and repetitive, preoccupied with trivia and the perpetuation of your bondage. To embrace this practice in my company requires the willingness to work, to do sadhana, to deal with yourself, to embrace discipline, to abandon habits, to adapt to principles of right living, to curb what needs to be managed so you can observe further. This is a very serious matter. You must embrace this process of discipline with a will and show the signs of it day by day. If you're doing it, then every time you gather for reality consideration, there should be more to confess and more disciplines to be embraced. And you serve one another. By personally practicing, you bring clarity to those groups. And if we have the clarity not only relative to dealing with yourself, you have the clarity to address others, to observe them, to see the details that they may not quite be catching, you see, to acquire more of them, and so forth. This is how you serve one another. Otherwise, you make so-called reality consideration into a social occasion, merely. Much would be dealt with, much observation would be occurring, even if you embraced the general order of disciplines I've given to all devotees, you see, if you seriously embraced all those disciplines, even apart from the unique disciplines that must apply to you personally, if you seriously embraced the full order of practice I've given you, already there would be great observation, great clarity. But then you must discipline yourself further, and in particular. The student beginner practice, or even beginning the student novice practice, is a progressive building up then of this order of self-disciplined practice. And much that is fundamental would be established by the time of maturity as a student beginner then. Then you truly would show the right signs that characterize a 1.1 practitioner, you see. Quickly on to 1.2. There is time necessary in it, but the extra time that you tend to build up in it would not be required. You'd progress from clarity to clarity. And true hearing would not take a great long time. It would take its minimum time, that minimum that is required of a serious individual. More than establishing new yamas and niyamas regularly, what you're generally doing is establishing more and more complications regularly. By indulging in your reactivity, desiring, seeking, and so forth, you're always introducing more and more complications, more and more life business then that you have to take time to handle. Whereas you should be simplifying your life by address to your life business and stop creating diversions and complications and all the time-wasting dramatizations that you gather up in your undisciplined fashion. When the Kanyas made their most direct change in practice, it was a conscious decision. They fully embraced it. Don't expect me to do anything but yawn if you won't do just the same, because that's what it requires. How many more years are you going to waste bargaining with me about this point? There are no bargains about this point. This is what it takes. That's it, flat. There's no way to evade it and have the process work. You've got to become very sensitive to yourself and to others, to notice the details of the life games, the reactivity, the desiring, the dramatizations, the seeking, the life complications. You must be very sensitive to one another, and obviously to yourself, so that you can establish a right order of discipline in your own case. And be working toward further and further clarity, more and more consummate or fundamental, eventually most fundamental self-observation. This is what it takes, you see. You've got to discipline yourself further. Not only to being consoled, but to this tendency to just be stimulated by your own seeking, which is a kind of consolation in itself, but it may not feel quite as good as what you might usually call consolation. Sometimes you like just being stimulated. even though it doesn't altogether feel good, it's a kind of arousal or whatever, like drinking a cup of coffee or something. So you settle for that. You're either settling for stimulation, the stimulation of your seeking, or the consolations that can be associated with it. This is your daily mediocrity. Well, how do you cut through that? What commitments must you have to cut through that? It's just what I've been saying. The embrace of discipline that curbs that seeking, that consolation, that stimulation, and reflects you to yourself. Then get out your notebook and write them all down, report it at the next meeting, and embrace a whole series of disciplines, 150 of them if necessary, to curb it, to reflect it to yourself, you see? That's what disciplines do. They curb some tendency and act as a kind of sounding board, a biofeedback mechanism, if you like, psychophysical mechanism to reflect you back to yourself. Without the discipline, you just go with the tendencies, you see? And there's no real observation in it. There's indulgence, there's experiencing, but not observation, not responsibility, and no deeper observation, obviously. Well, this should be the day-by-day endeavor of each of my devotees. And this should be the business you get down to when you have group gatherings with one another, group occasions. That should be your stated intention. Each one to engage in further examination relative to what they've observed about themselves, further confession about it, in order to find out what are the necessary disciplines to be added. This should be the regular business, the, as they call it, routine, but in other words, this is what you should set down to do every time you have such a meeting. This is what you should be doing with yourself every day. And effectively coming to a point of view about it constantly. A new agreement, a new discipline, made known to others, and you're to be held accountable for by others, especially those of the group that you meet with regularly, and others who are intimate with you perhaps, and so on. So that's work, you see? And that's interesting, too. Instead of just getting together and babbling in some superficial social manner, this is the business. This is what you're to call one another to do. You should be a culture of expectation and inspiration. And people should be mature enough, straight enough, committed enough to responsibly participate in that and not be dragging everyone down into the well with dramatizations and requiring the culture then to be basically some sort of a nursing place to struggle with people in the midst of their dramatizations. As soon as somebody goes through one and they're out of it, somebody thinks it's their turn. The whole gathering then becomes perpetually involved in struggling with petulant people who think they're not obliged to be responsible, who think they don't have adult human obligations to keep themselves straight. And whenever they're having difficulties, to be straightforward, conversant about it, ready to embrace more discipline and practice rightly to deal with it. If you don't practice right discipline, then you're always leaving yourself open for your next dramatization. You must learn to discipline yourself without expectations. You must love without expectations, you see? You must live without being controlled by expectations, at any rate. You must live in such a way that no matter what arises, no matter what other people do and so forth, you can deal with it in one other truly effective way and not have to sink into irresponsible dramatization. This is ordinary self-control, you see? This is what it's supposed to be an adult human being. That capacity is supposed to be educated into you. It's fundamental to the course of the first three stages of life, but unfortunately, it is given only lip service and not much real training, not much real growth. So people get to adult age without this equipment. So you wind up using your adult years to finish the schooling of the first three stages of life. What use is a discipline if you don't apply it consistently? If you let yourself off the hook when the stress of your own tendencies starts coming to the front, then the discipline is ineffective. When you just do it when it's easy and so forth, it has no effect. You will not observe anything. You must not let yourself off the hook. That's why you have to be kept accountable by the culture. You must be in a position of being observed regularly. And you must observe yourself, obviously. The whole point of assuming a discipline is to embrace it consistently and not find room to let yourself off the hook. You must be served by being called on it by others. But you have to call yourself on it. That's the root of discipline, being able to deal with yourself. To view yourself as a victim is to be very much self-important. Everybody has difficulties. Life is difficult, requires something of you. Another way of characterizing the victim consciousness, so to speak, is that it's always looking for something or someone to blame, even for the pettiest of life difficulties or demands. You always look for somebody or something to blame, or some past incident, whatever it may be, to justify your lack of responsibility, lack of clarity, lack of effectiveness. So it's not just relative to the most traumatic of life incidents that this mechanism gets generated, you see. It's an ordinary mechanism, and it's also culturally reinforced, socially reinforced, politically reinforced, reinforced by social and political institutions, even. So it's not associated with traumatic life merely. It's just living life in such a fashion as to always be let off the hook because there's always something or someone to blame. And you therefore don't have to be responsible, you just blame. I presume that the seat of responsibility is not in yourself, it's in all the causes in your life. And they are just what they are, so there's nothing you can do about it. They're always running through the time stream of memory to find where they were victimized here or there, what there is to blame here and there, what incident can be blamed for, what people, mommy, daddy, whoever else, what incidents, what experiences, what diseases, whatever it may be, always going down the time track to find what to blame. And then dramatizing, being victimized there, getting sympathy from everybody about their bad experience. It's a characteristic of Western culture, but it's also a characteristic of mankind. It's shown politically and socially, culturally in certain ways in America, in Europe, or whatnot, other parts of the world. But it's rather a universal disposition. You know, the root religions, the original religions, were rather local, tribal, and so forth, and in general shamanistic. I was telling a story the other night about checking out some gypsy woman one time when I was going across country and getting an example of what the shamanistic ceremony is all about. It's always a matter of blaming some, in general, some curse or evil spirit. A curse by some living person or persons, or an evil discarnate personality that is somehow surrounding you or being effective in your case. And so the shaman has you go through a ritual, and then the shaman does a ritual, a dance, some words, whatever it may be, you see. And the whole intention is to somehow eliminate the bad spirits, the curses, that are affecting your life. You don't have any responsibility generated by it. You see, you have resorted to somebody who can do a song and dance, and you do a song and dance, and maybe that sugar pill relaxes you a little bit, and you feel a little better, and go back to the herd. But it doesn't become great responsibility. What is psychiatry? A shamanism, then, in a rather sophisticated modern form. Looking for what to blame, what incident, what people, what experiences, what events, and so forth. Going through the ceremony of letting you talk about it, dream about it, explaining it, having you be the victim of whatever those events may be, those people may be, and so forth. And going through that sugar pill ritual, and maybe you feel a little bit more relaxed, and so forth. But what responsibility then? See, responsibility is in the person, the own state, the ego. Place. You see? That's where responsibility must arise. If you understand that, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference who has done what to you, what experiences you've had in the past, recently, long ago, before this lifetime, in this lifetime. It doesn't make any difference. Those things can be observed, so you'll see how you built up patterns on the basis of all of that. But there's no true healing in it unless you get down to the consideration of your responsibility for your own reaction, your own self-contraction. Ultimately, you must realize in the own position, the self position, responsibility for your own reactivity, your own dissociation, your own separativeness, your own generation of a victim ritual. This is what you must understand. There'll be difficult events in the future, just as there have been difficult events in the past. How is it to be dealt with? By responsibility for your own reactivity. Your own self-possession, your own self-enclosure, your own dissociation, your own separativeness. So this is the key to healing people of their various disorders and life problems, you see, the development of responsibility. not the constant finding of things to blame, and going through, in effect, shamanistic rituals around it, you see, a song and dance, to just relax your mind about it, and now you feel cured, you see. No, responsibility is the key. Responsibility for the ego act, the self-contraction itself, and all the reactivity, dramatization, seeking, desiring, pursuit of objects and others and so forth, it comes from your own act. Realize that responsibility, you see. Love, forgiveness flows from you toward all events, all past, all future, all present. And you can live freely and transcend life difficulties. That's religious life manifested in action. Of course, the religious life most fundamentally is about self-transcendence to the point of perfect self-transcendence and the realization of the divine condition. But as a manifestation in life, this is how it shows itself, you see, through responsibility for the self-contraction, not rehearsing the victim rituals. That's what it is to be a man, male or female. That's manly responsibility. That's appropriate human responsibility. That's true civilization. To be civil, to be responsible for yourself, to know that what you do not only affects yourself, but affects others, and to therefore assume responsibility for yourself, for the sake of your own life, continued growth, development, and freedom, but for the sake of the same in others, you must experience a great unwillingness to contaminate others. This is another way of describing the Bodhisattva principle in Buddhism, you see? An unwillingness to do that, but to live in such a way that everything you do your whole life serves the liberation of others instead. But to live casually in the worldly and egoic fashion, you see, is to agree to contaminate others constantly. To agree to have a bad effect on everyone. Not to mention on yourself. That's not the religious commitment. That's a godless, ego-based disposition. Not only godless, truthless, without reality, without understanding, without discrimination, without seriousness, without commitment to life as a serious process that has great dimensions to it, not just the local contaminated herd point of view at the moment. It's a willingness to be clear in yourself and live the good life, the right life, whether anybody else does it or not. And to have made that agreement yourself and come into the company of my other devotees, all of you must have made such an agreement, you see. I mean, just here with one another and with me to get down to it, just that. No diversions, no dramatizations. To live a truly human life, a great culture. I don't suggest victimization to anybody, or justify it from anybody. Only responsibility. Understanding yourself, becoming responsible for this mass of illusions and self-protective self-possession that you are dramatizing and calling life. Even sometimes you call it truth, or divine communion. Whereas it is, as I say in my New York manner, bullshit! And you have to deal with it, not find some other way to avoid dealing with it, you see, by calling yourself victim or mighty whatever. You have to take responsibility for the fact that you're embedded in the illusion and dramatization, self-possession. There's no way out of it except to observe and understand yourself and outgrow these limitations. No victimization suggested in the slightest. You always have to give the shaman a dollar, and the shaman indicates that you can't handle it. You can participate along with the shaman by doing some ritual yourself. Like the gypsy I went to suggested I put a tomato in my shoe under my bed for the night, wrapped in a handkerchief. That wasn't a responsible act of mine. In other words, I couldn't do anything about this evil spirit that was attacking me, according to the gypsy. But she would do what was necessary. She'd be burning candles all night, making prayers, and doing her rituals. And then the next day I went back to her, and I brought her the tomato wrapped in a handkerchief. She took the handkerchief out around it carefully, was manipulating the tomato. What she was really doing behind it is sticking in this little sculptured golem with a really weird little face on it. She broke up the front of the tomato and pushed this thing forward, and there was this ugly thing inside. And that was her saying to me that her ritual had been effective. The evil spirit had left me, it was in the tomato. Now she'll burn it, she'll throw it away, and I'll be all right. Substitute for the little sculptured golem, mommy, daddy, childhood sex experiences, all the blah blah difficulties since. And the only way you can get free of it is by mommy daddy psychiatrist doing his or her candle ritual or whatever, intellectual interpretation, explanation, blah, blah. You see? And then everything will be okay. You don't get God realization by having a psychiatrist do anything. You get maybe some, if the sugar pill works, some ability to be better integrated as a social personality, a little more relaxed about it, a little less aberrated, a little less dramatic, if you're willing to do so. There are evil spirits, there are evil intentions, there are all kinds of things that affect people. But the way to deal with it is to generate the position of responsibility in your own case. This way of devotion, you see, Ishtaguru Bhakti, is not about irresponsibility, but it's not what it's about. It's not about irresponsibility. It's not about giving yourself over to somebody who's going to do a shamanistic ritual on you, you see. It's about responsibility. That's what it's about. Right use of the realizer. It's a religious discipline. Laudable and most profound. Should not be mocked. Must be understood, must be rightly practiced. So you're not called to irresponsibility in my company, but to complete responsibility. Complete. And from the beginning. Responsibility from the beginning and growing more and more, you see? I don't invite people into a cultic relationship to me, a phony relationship to me. I'm not a fake. Therefore, I have to constantly address your tendencies otherwise, to be cultic, to be childishly dependent, to play out adolescent games of dependence, independence, two sides crazily, you see? I'm not interested in irresponsible people surrounding me like some stupid cultic herd. Not in the slightest. It offends me mightily, and I'll have nothing to do with it. So understand what it is I am talking about and what this Ishtaguru Bhakti is about. Be responsible for it, and therefore communicate in the world what a great and truly responsible matter it is. Not a damn bunch of cultic fools sucking up to me. So make it plain. Educate the world. Invite them to this true responsible practice in my company. And don't be fools. Consider this. Every time you dramatize reactivity, you are thinking you are the victim of someone or something or some event. Every time. Reactivity is a sure sign that you have this point of view. Instead of introducing the self-responsible discipline into an occasion of some difficulty or other, some stress or other, if you react and dramatize reactivity, you're blaming the event, blaming the other. Always. It's always so. Of course, there are all kinds of events in life, and there are reactions, so perhaps you can't altogether stop that. But to dramatize the reaction, to go on with it into a whole period of drama, irresponsibility, self-possession, weakness, no practice, you see, is to act like the victim. It is to blame the event. The event, or the other, is why you're weak, why you're not responsible, why you can't deal with yourself, why you get crazy, you see? That's your own reactivity. That's that part of reactivity that you must become responsible for. Perhaps in an instant a reaction can't be avoided. If a tiger jumps out of the bush, fear occurs, flight occurs, fine. But to make a life out of it, even when the tiger disappears, you see? That's the dramatization of reactivity. That's egoity showing itself in a life form. So every time you dramatize reactivity, you're blaming something or someone and not being responsible for yourself. Before it becomes dramatization, you have to deal with the reaction itself. And to truly deal with the reaction itself, you have to come to the point of most fundamental self-understanding. And especially from that point of view then, you can retard the dramatization of reactivity. But even before that, don't blame non-hearing or use it as an excuse to dramatize, you see? Because even from the beginning of this way, my devotees are supposed to understand themselves, be able to deal with their dramatization because of significant self-understanding, you see? Apply discipline. Not go with the flow, not roll into dramatization and abuse everyone, because, you see, every dramatization abuses others because it thinks it's the victim of others, of events, and so forth. As long as you think that way, you get into these sometimes horrific dramatizations and abuses and collapses, you see. This is infantile. Certainly adolescent. It's not the kind of thing that adult human beings should be doing. Just because you're older than 18 or 21, or even though you're over 18 or 21 years of age, you think you still have the right to react like an adolescent, or to live and react in an infantile manner. You should be still home with your parents in that case. You should be sent home, not be permitted association with adult humanity. You should be locked in your room, not given dinner, no TV, no candy. Unfortunately, that's not the way it is, you see. The world is roamed and infiltrated by adolescent and infantile characters and never finished their first three stages of life business. Never became responsible for themselves. What part do they have in a civilized life then, a human life, an adult life? They're not prepared for it. If we were to send all the aberrated characters back home to their parents and be locked into their room, there'd hardly be anybody functioning in the world. Because the world as it is based on the adolescent mentality and the infantile mentality. It's justifying it. It's not civilized. It has nothing to do with true religion. It's suffering. It's a total pain in the ass. It's chaos. Unfortunately, there are no norms for true adult human behavior, you see. There's a lot of petty this and that brought out of the hip pocket whenever it seems convenient to abuse somebody. But real norms of human life, of civilized life, of politics, social life and so forth, they don't really exist anymore. They're just brought out as a matter of convenience in order to get at somebody, usually. But where is the presumption of it? Where is it in politics? Where is it in the relations between nations? Where is it in the relations between people face to face, one by one? The psychology of irresponsibility pervades the entire world. It's not really a Western matter, an American matter, you see. The whole world is dramatizing the self-contraction and losing its order, losing its positive human basis, losing its true religious basis. You see, it's all being thrown down the toilet with dramatizations. Everybody's in the trenches, wary. If anybody's dramatizing, they're blaming everybody. Blaming me, blaming the world, blaming the past. They're sitting there being fussy about that, pretending to be just under it, and you're all sympathetic, crawling all over them with your blah blah, whatever it may be. But they're engaged in an aggressive act of blaming you, blaming others, blaming everything. And that's their justification for collapse. What does that have to do with the way of the heart? Why should that contaminate this culture? There's no one to blame. Straighten out. Wake up. You can't work anything out of level of dramatization. You just leave victims of yourself all over the place. People abused, shut down, turned off, worked over. All over the place, you see? And you calling yourself a victim, which sounds sort of cute and mild and inoffensive, you see? But you have to understand the aggressiveness in this notion of being a victim. Dramatizers are abusing people. Always. They're always blaming people. Not nice, and not true either. It's somebody resorting to an adolescent or infantile disposition. It has no business in adult human society. No place there. But when you call yourself a victim, you're thinking like you're passive. Actually, you're being very aggressive and blaming others. Stop it short. Stop it flat. Make apologies whatever necessary. Straighten out. Don't carry on a dramatization for any period of time at all. Be sufficiently responsible for yourself, you could just stop it right in the middle. Straighten out, understand what you're doing. Apologize wherever necessary, as I said. And just get out of it. Don't wither the gathering, the community of my devotees with bullshit. Just drop it flat. That's the expectation side, you see, of this culture. It's a culture of inspiration and expectation. This is what the expectation side requires. Human signs, signs of responsibility, signs of responsibility for dramatization. Let's be simpler and milder and happier. much more responsible. But live the simpler life based on real self-understanding. That's my calling to you. And if the life articles are simplified, it doesn't reduce you to deprivation. What's left over? The great way, God realization, true feeling with one another, right and real and true and positive human exchanges in a circumstance of simplicity. Sounds good to me. So the traditional admonitions, eat less, sleep less, talk less, increase your devotion, increase your love, increase your meditation, you see? Well, what's it about? Simplification. Living simply. And in my word to you, understanding yourself, assuming the position of responsibility rather than irresponsibility. Stop being a victim. Stop being crazy. Stop dramatizing and abusing people, you see? Be responsible for yourself. Live much more simply. Reduce your diet. Reduce sleep to the minimum required for well-being. Stop blah-blahing. Stop making a talking school out of life, you see? Speak plainly, simply, directly, clearly. Conserve your speech to what is appropriate. Magnify devotion, love, meditation, all the aspects of the God-realizing life. Simplify your life altogether in terms of its common orientation or requirements, and magnify all the things that are God-realizing and that are truly happy and positive. Get together, have a meeting about this, and cut out the bullshit. Do it just this way, you see? Be my serious devotees. And stop your damn dramatizations, which is a way of blaming everybody or whoever, complaining, abusing, making excuses to not practice. Where'd your talk come from anyway? Out of the self-possessed, ego-manufactured mind. Just running on with it, you see? What are you going to do? Dramatize. Speech must be a matter of responsibility in your case. Be utterly truthful. Speak truth. Conform to truth. Be confessed. Say what's necessary. And otherwise, shut up! Make a truly human culture in my company, you see? Be manly, male or female. Stop being fools. Drop out of the world in the sense of the common design and stress and egoic aspirations. Make a community with one another, a culture with one another, a mission with one another, an institution with one another that makes the straight and real, laudable, praiseworthy. Well, that's what you have to do then, not just talk about. Get down to business with one another, make agreements, and stop the bullshit. Life is so often not profound, you have to introduce dramatization to somehow make it energetic. That's what I mean about suggesting to you that you indulge in your seeking for the sake of the stress of it, the stimulation of it. Because life is so ordinary, so boring in this general context, why not throw in a really heavy dramatization there and have an interesting few weeks out of that, really work people over about it. My realization doesn't diminish the happiness of human life with me, not in the slightest. Well, why should it diminish it with you? A life of great discipline, which is what I do expect of you, you see, is associated with simplicity and having your life be governed by the inherent happiness of life, of existence ultimately, you see. No more boring, mere obligations. All heart registered, life worth living. Existence clarified, authenticated. My house is filled with all kinds of trinkets given to me by my devotees, by my kanyas, my brahmacharinis. I put them on my body, I wear them. But I embrace all these things, I love it, you see? It's not the quality of the object, because the object very often is very fine. Most of the things my brahmacharinis give me now, they're so advanced in their arts, are actually very fine. But that's not beside the point, it's part of the pleasure of it, but it's just happy love connection, not complicated by worldly bullshit, you see? And ordinary expectations. There's nothing to do with that, you see? It's just free, loving, happy connection, which people make gifts to one another. People bring me leaves here and flowers. They're my own leaves and flowers. You draw them off my trees, but they express your devotion, your love. You see, I'm willing to be made handsome by the surrounding of flowers. You see? I put it on whatever it looks like. So it should be for you. Friendship, love, you see, that's the substance of life. Not all this monotonous middle-class expectation. Life in its physical form and its associations can be very simple. That's not where the happiness comes. It's from the heart life. The heart expression, truly lived, truly felt. You see, no immunity in you against it because of your expectations, your aberrations, your dramatizations, all that garbage that you're wasting your life with. What human beings in their love can do with one another and affect one another, you see, and prize one another, that's what it's all about, don't you know? Please get down to it then. Simplify your life and you'll find out how precious the heart is. Make this life out of the heart, you see? You can make heartfelt gestures to one another without any bucks at all. So until you set yourselves right, bring me flowers, that's it. To be simple, you see, is to live in the heartfelt disposition. You don't need much. The things that you really require for your survival, your general well-being, can be simply provided if you would cooperate with one another and straighten yourselves out. And then instead of being oinked up by your couch potato life with TV and common society and worldly bullshit, you see, it's simple. It's a kind of stress that awakens the heart, that simplicity. And then therefore all the exchanges between human beings become truly feeling exchanges, truly significant, truly happy. And that's how you should live. You can live much more simply. You can live simply with your intimate. You can live a happy life. You can live a human life in my company. If you get responsibility for yourself, make a true community, a true mission, a true culture, a true institution. Come here fully prepared on retreat. You can do all these things. There's no impediment to prevent it, except your own stupid dramatization. We all here live very simply on this island. I do too. But it's extraordinary luxury of the heart. We make life here out of love, out of the heart, out of the gestures of the heart. That's a kingdom. That's luxury, you see. That's the way it should be for all. Drop all your expectations. Live simply, live truly. Be responsible for yourself. Then you can make a life out of the energy of the heart disposition. You can be sensitized. You are sensitized to the true reality of existence, you see. Then everything is blessed. Live from the heart, live as the heart, make life out of the heart, then all of a sudden all humanity, all those with whom you are associated are nourished. And life, with all its limitations, becomes about just that. Not some other intention you have that winds up making you abuse everybody or living a silly-ass life in your self-indulgence. Your reactivity is your concern. Nobody should have to suffer it. No one. His life sign is very brief. Make it precious then. Honor it by right life.